Next on BYUSN, let's discuss some running back depth. If LJ Martin's not available to go beginning in the season, are the Cougars okay? It's an Overreaction Friday as we take a look at some of the best plays over the first 2 days of training camp and naturally overreact to them.
We're going to do a deep dive into BYU's quarterback battle with former quarterback Riley Nelson. Who does he think will win the job? And the non-conference schedule's out for women's hoops. We'll break it down with Ariel Mackey-Williams and Sarah Bartholomew. And that's how we're doing Friday.
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Indeed, it is a happy Friday, August 2nd. I'm Spencer Linton, and he is one of 10 children in the McCann family, Dave McCann.
You know, and why is that a thing? Because wherever I've gone in my life, when someone says, how many brothers and sisters do you have? And I say 9. They just go, what? That's crazy. Well, today, the Big 12 gets 4 new adopted members into their league. And so now they got 16 in their family. And the thing about a big family is it's really cool, but it's a lot of work and there's a lot of chaos. There's a lot of teasing. There's some fighting. And the plea from the parents or the commissioner is, can we just play nice and get along and share? Will you just share with your brothers and sisters? So here we go. It's officially here, the 16-team Big 12 family.
Who ate the whole box of Lucky Charms?
And no one says anything, including the one with all the marshmallows on their face.
It wasn't me. Oh, fantastic stuff.
So they're in. It's good. Let's go. And, you know, are they going to stay at 16? Who knows? That seems to be a popular social media thing.
It might be 18. It might go to 20 at some point.
But what we know today is it's 16, and that's a lot.
All rise and shout on that Cougar growl. Let's get to what's trending. BYU football training camp is officially underway. It came with major headlines, talking about the running back specifically. LJ Martin was banged up for a considerable amount of time. Miles Davis as well, Hinkley Rapace. There's a lot of big name players coming back from injuries. Will they be available immediately? Running back depth on the mind this Friday as BYU is now within, let's see, how many days? I'm doing math on live television. 29 days of game number one. And specifically, the status of LJ Martin, Hinkley Rapace, and Miles Davis. Those are the three front runners in the running back's room. And I know that there are some reports out there from the media that have surfaced recently, notably yesterday, that LJ is a little banged up and he might miss some time. Let's be clear, BYU has confirmed nothing, and LJ Martin is practicing. So take the reports for what they're worth with a grain of salt. And let's discuss, Dave, that if LJ is not available for the early part of the season, where BYU stands at the running back position. If Martin is to miss any time at all, and again, nothing confirmed by BYU, are the Cougars and the running back stable okay for Southern Illinois, SMU, and maybe Wyoming?
I think, too, if Martin's good to go, there's still a battle between the three. With Miles Davis and Hinkley Rapace and LJ. And remember, we didn't see LJ last year until Rapace was out for the year with the ACL and Aiden Robinson had broken his ribs. If Rapace was healthy, we probably wouldn't have seen Martin last year as a true freshman coming out of Texas. So back then, a year ago, it was Robbins and Rapace. Now Rapace's healthy. So is Rapace the one back anyway? I don't know, but with Hinkley healthy in camp, and he looked good the other day in the workouts we saw, and Miles Davis healthy in camp, and then you got LJ, who did get banged up in the spring. He's talked about that. The significance of it is up for debate, but we'll see as practice continues and as he continues to develop. But he's one of three in this group that Kalani told us on Wednesday. He feels all three are going to be able to run the football.
Yes. And again, we're not here to speculate because BYU will release what they release when they release it. For the time being, all three are practicing.
Yep.
But to your point, if LJ Martin hypothetically were not available for the early part of the season, I picked Miles Davis as my fall camp MVP. And Blaine Fowler picked Hinkley Rapace as his fall camp MVP. Right. Clearly, we feel like all three are capable. And here's why. Because we expect BYU's offensive line to be markedly better. So frankly, regardless of who you have back there, if the offensive line, as reported, is way better with the coaching of TJ Woods, then all three of those guys should find some success early in the season. SMU will be a tough test, but specifically against Southern Illinois and Wyoming, I mean, good grief, Miles Davis's best game happened against Wyoming a couple of seasons ago. But fair to say that we anticipate that you plug and play any of those three and there will be success, because the front should be, and we believe will be, way better than they were last year.
It's the H word on this Friday. It's health. And all three of these running backs have been banged up. As you mentioned, Davis, there he goes for 131 yards in that night against Wyoming. Never been completely healthy since. Hinkley Rapati was 4-0 at the end of 2022. He was big at Boise State, Utah Tech. He was big at Stanford and in the bowl game. They won all four games. And we haven't seen him since, except for at practice, because he had his ACL or MCL last year, and that cost him the season. And then freshmen get banged up, and Martin's been banged up. So whoever's healthy, and if all three can be healthy, that's just great.
Yes.
Because that's an area where BYU has not been healthy for the longest time. And as of today, and we'll be out at practice tonight to check things out, but as of today, we're told all three are healthy. We'll see. But we do know that all three have not been healthy, and we also know that when healthy, they've all been very productive. Mm.
So all of them have a unique skill set. All three talented. LJ has that capability to break tackles. It reminds me of Tyler Allgeier. Yeah. His ability to shed a tackle, especially early in the play, and then create yards after contact. You look at all of his big plays last year against Arkansas, against Texas Tech, against Southern Utah. He broke tackles, multiple in some of those runs, and then broke off a big play. So he's got that special capability to run physical and shed tacklers early in when he's engaged in the play. I believe he's the best option to catch the ball out of the backfield, and then, man, he's just a bowling ball and shifty. Like, his speed catches you off guard. He's quicker than you think he's going to be, as he can shuttle around the side. So Hinkley, I believe, with his shiftiness and his pass-catching ability, that makes him unique. And then Miles is the fastest of the backs. Yeah. It's his speed, and he's leaned out, and we just hope, yes, health is maintained for all three. Miles' speed is special.
Look at this.
Special. Tom Holmoe, before the Wyoming game where he broke out a couple of years ago, said, Spencer, he has the potential to be great if he can stay healthy. So it's his speed and agility that set him apart from the other two. So unique. They're three different style running backs. We feel like BYU will be in good hands regardless of who's back there against Southern.
I love their attitudes. They've all got great attitudes. LJ, who's the young guy, he's fun to talk to. And he's here to be the best at BYU. He's driven by that. So when he gets on the field,
LJ special.
If it's August 31st or whatever, when he gets the football, we expect him to be 100%. And as he does, and he expects to be the best. You love that when you visit with a kid, and you're like going, he actually thinks he's going to be the best.
Yes.
As opposed to, well, I'm going to give my best shot. Now he goes, I want to be the best.
Yeah.
So.
That mix of humility and confidence.
Yeah.
Like, it's a unique brand in LJ, for sure.
And he
mentally
ran for miles down there in El Paso.
Let's go.
All right, topic number two. It's Overreaction Friday.
Yes!
We're going to show you some of the best plays from fall camp. Then we're going to make a statement about the player making each play. And then we'll ask the question, and we invite you at home to follow along. Is this an overreaction or not? So we're going to start with a catch from Keelan Marion.
Mm.
Check this out. Now, Marion had 20 receptions for 216 yards.
Woo!
Three total touchdowns last season.
He's
all
back!
Three scores were on the ground on those jet sweeps. So based on this catch here, Keelan Marion will double his receiving yards.
Ooh.
And touchdown production from last season. This is an overreaction or not?
Okay, so you're saying if he doubled his receiving yards, that would be 432 yards or more and six total touchdowns. I don't feel like this is an overreaction at all in the yards category. Keelan Marion, I expect him to hit 432 or more yards because of his big play ability. He's the guy that, better than anyone else in that wide receiver room, with his speed can stretch a defense. I expect him to be a la Todd Watkins and Austin Colley, really stretching the field and making some of those big plays this season. Also, you see his ability last year on the edges running the ball. So with his production and capability running and receiving, 6 touchdowns, that I like it, but it's that one might be an overreaction because I feel like you got to spread the wealth. There are so many weapons. 6 touchdowns is going to be tough for Keelan to hit, but I expect him to absolutely reach that 432 yards receiving mark.
If you're looking for engaging personalities, he's in the top 5 of the whole team. Outstanding.
He's fantastic.
Young guy. But I agree with you. 6 is a stretch because there are so many guys, including the one we're going to talk about now, who might get a bunch of them.
Speaking of, Keanu Hill. Look at this grab from Keanu early on in training camp. So based on this catch, Dave, and it's a great one, and after having just 1 touchdown last season, will Keanu Hill lead BYU in touchdown catches? It's going to happen. Let's say he's going to do it. Is that an overreaction or not?
That is not an overreaction.
Ooh, you think he's going to lead?
Initially, I was thinking Chase Roberts, but then I started thinking about Keanu, who has receiver hands and receiver speed, being picked up by linebackers over the middle or in the end zone.
Red zone target.
I like Keanu getting the ball a whole lot. And Kalani told us that things were looking really good for him. He's a little heavier. He can eat better. He likes that. We know he's got amazing hands. His ability is to stay healthy. He
didn't, yes.
He wasn't healthy at the start of last season. But if he's healthy, then yes, Keanu Hill's going to lead the receiving corps in touchdowns.
Wow. Okay. I don't know that this is an overreaction because of the natural play calling style of Aaron Roderick to target a tight end in the red zone. And as you pointed out, Dave, Keanu is going to be a matchup nightmare for a lot of the guys that are across the ball from him, specifically in those red zone scenarios. Because of his frame and he's bulked up, you want to throw a lob? Like, think about how many times Isaac Rex was targeted on a lob. Keanu Hill is more athletic and has a bigger catch radius than Isaac Rex.
And remember, he's already graduated. He came back to catch touchdowns at tight end because he thinks it's going to help him get to the next level.
Is it going to happen? I don't know. Maybe not. But to say that it could is absolutely not an overreaction. He could lead in receiving touchdowns.
Yeah. All right, this next play is from Hinkley Rapati. Been talking about the running backs today, and he's looked good early on in camp. And I know it's early, but you either look good or you don't early in camp. Will Hinkley rush for at least 100 yards against Southern Illinois in the opener? Is this an overreaction or not, considering he went for 189 yards and a touchdown in 2022 and didn't play last year?
His career high, for what it's worth, is 85 yards against Stanford back in 2022. I'm going to say this is an overreaction, but not because Hinkley can't do it. I just think if BYU has a running quarterback and whoever starts, Gary Bohannon or Jake Retzlaff, they're going to pick up some big yardage that way against Southern Illinois. The quarterback will do some running with their feet. We'll see multiple running backs in that game. We'll see Miles Davis. Who knows? May see a little bit of LJ Martin if he is truly healthy and he's back to play. And they're spreading the wealth, Dave. So 100 yards for Hinkley specifically, I feel like that's a little bit of an overreaction just because it's game number one, and I think Aaron Rodgers is going to use a lot of people.
I think the offensive line is so bound and determined to show 62,000 fans in the stadium and everyone else who's watching that they are different from last year and that they are going to run the football. I think Rapati will get 100 yards on August 31st against Southern Illinois.
Okay.
That's a message game. And granted, it's Southern Illinois, but it's a message game going into SMU on national TV.
It's probably going to take 18 to 20 carries to get there.
Yeah.
Are they going to give Hinkley 18 to 20 carries? That'd be great. I would love to see it.
He's going to bust a couple and, he and his wife are about to have their first. He's running for a whole lot of stuff.
He's going to break a couple big runs. Okay, let's stay with the running back theme, shall we?
Here's our last play.
Miles Davis.
Okay.
He broke 100 yards, 131 against Wyoming 2 seasons ago. He will have at least 1 game with 100-plus rushing yards at some point this season. Is this an overreaction or not?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, last year he was 16 for 78 in limited play. Had that big game against Wyoming. We saw some highlights a moment ago. He's looking good. Had a great summer conditioning and all of that stuff. Capable, yes. But I think Rapati and Martin are going to get the bulk of the kind of carries that can get you to 100 yards, okay, unless you bust a 90-yarder like he did against Wyoming at a huge run and finished with 131. And then after you get through these first couple of games, you start running into some defenses that are in the Big 12, where I think maybe galloping for past the century mark might be a little more difficult.
Okay.
So I'm going to say he's going to have some really productive games, but not over 100.
I think he's going to do it. I think it's going to be one of those games where he breaks a big, long run. I don't know who it's going to happen against. Maybe it's Arizona State late in the season when teams are banged up. Maybe it's Houston in the regular season finale. Maybe it's at Wyoming again, especially if L.J. Martin can't go and it's Hinkley and Miles.
Yeah, yeah, all possible.
He can break a long run with that speed. At some point this season, I don't think it's an overreaction to say he'll go over 100 yards.
Okay, here's our last play. Deep ball from Gary Bohannon to JoJo Phillips.
Beautiful.
Question. Woo! Now, Gary will set the new career high for him with at least 19 touchdown passes this season. Is this an overreaction or not, considering BYU's 5-7 year last year, where they struggled mightily on offense, they threw for 17 touchdown passes.
BYU had a combined 17 touchdown passes last season.
Yeah.
That number is eye-popping. Well, I think this is an overreaction for a couple of reasons. One, we don't even know if Gary's going to start.
You got to get the job first.
If he gets the job, is he going to throw for 19 touchdowns or more? Because he can run, and because BYU has so many weapons and so much speed on the edge, and they love to use the jet sweep, I feel like those are touchdown grabbers. They take away touchdown pass scenarios. Right now, this is a little bit of an overreaction because he's not the starter. And even in that Sugar Bowl championship year, he had 18 touchdown passes. That was an amazing year. Him to go 19? Right now, it's an overreaction day. What do you think?
If he's healthy, which he appears to be, and if he's the starter, which he is competing for, then yes, he'll throw for more than 19.
Woo-hoo! If he throws for 19 or more touchdown passes, BYU's winning at least 7 games.
Aaron Roderick has to unleash the offense, because there's some warm seats over there, and Aaron's sitting in one of them. Averaging 23.1 points last year isn't good enough.
Got to average 30.
They made some changes on the offensive line because the 3.5 yards of carry wasn't good enough. So I think, you know what? To quote the great John Robinson, you let all the cows out of the barn and just have what may. If you have a healthy quarterback slinging it, and you got all these receivers, chuck it downfield and let's see what happens. And he's capable of doing that.
There are a few things I love more on this show than specifically in fall camp, seeing one play and just running wild with it. Isn't it fantastic?
We're going to get some more plays tonight.
Our question of the day, through 2 days of fall camp, what is your biggest overreaction about BYU football? At Coronado Zach on X says, the pundits are wrong, wrong, wrong. And the pundits say BYU is a 4, maybe 5 win team that will finish 13th in the Big 12.
We're going to talk about one of those pundits here later in the show, where you're just like, what?
Some computer numbers that I guarantee you will not like. Hashtag BYUS on an X, Facebook, and Instagram.
If you miss any of our fall camp interviews or coverage, it's always there for you on demand on BYUSN.com or on the BYU Sports Nation's YouTube channel.
Up next, a man who is very familiar with quarterback battles because he was in it multiple years at BYU, Riley Nelson joins us. Who does he think will win the starting job? Does he think Gary Bohannon is going to throw for 19 or more touchdown passes? This is BYUSN. Kalani specifically referenced depth. We'll never be in a scenario where we don't have enough quarterbacks. So that's good, but who's going to start?
Gary's had a great summer. Jake's had a really good summer. That's what makes these next 2 weeks really intriguing.
Intriguing might be an understatement for the status of BYU football right now, with the quarterback battle and all of the questions out there looming about what this team is actually capable of doing or not doing in 2024. With that, welcome back on a Friday show. I'm Spencer Linton alongside Dave McCann in Studio B. Speaking of quarterback battles, why not bring in a man who was in a few and won it and then led BYU to a 10-win season after he eventually won it in 2011? He is Riley Nelson, back on BYUSN. Riley, how are you today?
Good. And if Gary wins it, you mentioned that year. That was a 2011 year. I threw 19 touchdown passes in 9 games. Eight games. Woo. So if I can do that, and if I can do that in 8 games, he can definitely do it if he wins it out in the fall camp. Now it's going to be a little bit harder, but no, it was. Quarterback battles are great things, man. They're good for the team. They're better for the individual players. At least that was my experience. So we shouldn't be fretting too much, and I'm sure we'll get into our line of questioning, but I'm much more concerned with the other, 10 guys on offense and the other 11 guys and their development. I think he got some bigger concerns there, but alas, we are in a, football's a quarterback-centric game, and so that's what everybody's most concerned about.
Yeah, that sounds like a quarterback's take. Everyone else, I got the other guys who I got my house in order here. So over there at BYU's house, they're doing split sessions at practice, really kind of running 2 practices at the same time so those 4 quarterbacks can get the same amount of reps. Do you like that strategy, and does that help bring this battle to a close sooner?
I think it does. I think on your evaluation, you have to the initial quarterback battle that I was in, so replacing Max Hall leading up to 2010, we were trying to install. So Coach and I knew my skill set. And actually, not that I'm going to take credit for all of Taysom's, about 10,000 rushing yards or whatever, but I want to take credit for at least 500 of them, because leading into that 2010, they saw my skill set. They saw my high school film. I was a 2,000-yard rusher my senior year in high school, as well as a 4,000-yard passer. And the staff, Robert, actually had gone and spent down time with Dan Mullen, who had recently left from Florida. He was offensive coordinator in Florida and architect of all the Tim Tebow stuff, had recently left to Mississippi State and was doing some really cool stuff in the quarterback run game. And Robert and I loved it. Mark Weber, offensive line, loved it too. Quarterback run is awesome because it makes targeting and blocking up the defensive front. It just gives you so much more freedom because now you don't have a wasted player in the box. The quarterback counts for an active player in the box. Anyway, we started the install in spring, but really went heavy on the install in the fall because that was after they had spent the time with the staff out at Mississippi State working on these QB run concepts. And one of the things I felt like made that competition so tough was a lot of my reps in 11-on-11, because that was the only time you could see them in live bullets, were spent repping this QB run package. And of course, Jake's reps were spent running kind of the traditional West Coast BYU, play action, drop back type thing. I still got some of that, but I got it to a lesser degree. And so we got through probably 10 practices, and Coach Dolman was wide open with the transparency in the quarterback. And I had about half or less than half of the passing attempts. And it was just evident that it's really hard to make an evaluation if you're not doing the same thing with the different quarterbacks. You need to take the quarterback and place him the same different quarterback in the exact same model in order to best identify who's the best one to run the offense. So from what I understand of BYU, they're doing that. They're not doing what we did. They don't have a Bohannon package. They don't have a Retzlaff package. They're not mixing things up. Rather, it feels to me like they're running, it's the same script, call it 12, 15 plays with one guy. All right, he's out. Next guy in, we're running those same 12, 15 plays. And that has two good effects, in my opinion. One is what I just mentioned. It allows for a more neutral or objective quarterback evaluation. The second thing is, I'm a believer that you can never rep your base stuff enough. So those offensive linemen, those wide receivers, getting those reps on those same pass protections, those route combinations, the blocking combos, too often you get bored a little bit in fall camp and you're like, well, let's throw in a bunch of wrinkles, and you're messing with motions and formation and things like that. I'm a believer of doing, stick to the fundamentals, be great at the fundamentals. And then as the season comes along, you can, add a tag on here or a motion there or something, but become great at the fundamentals. So I know it's early in fall camp, but I like what I hear is coming out of it so far.
Riley Nelson is on BYU Sports Nation. We heard Brandon Doman reference your quarterback battle with Jake Heaps in 2011 specifically when he joined us a few days ago, Riley, and he said, it was clear when we made the change, even before the change, that the team had rallied around Riley and they wanted him to be the guy. Now, I know that is a nuanced conversation, but Your coach said it was clear. So what are the key indicators that make it clear that a team is rallying around a guy, specifically maybe here in fall camp?
This is one of those things that is so difficult to articulate. Anybody that's been in a locker room, I think, can, like, and I'm not just talking a college locker room, right? I'm talking about any team sport at any level. Well, maybe let's say at least call it varsity high school, where, like, it's truly about, you know, competition and working together as a team. It's one of those things that's much more easily felt than it is described with words. But I think the biggest thing for me is body language in adverse situations. Like, and I think enough time has passed, and, you know, Jake was back for the old man game, and we're and he's doing his great things, you know, leading the Elite 11 and doing all of those things. So I think it's enough time has passed that we can kind of talk frankly about then. You got in a 3rd and 8 back in that 2011 with Jake, and you saw the eyes in the huddle, and it was like the wide receiver or the offensive line are like, man, I better give this guy like a big pocket with a lot of time. The wide receiver's like, man, if I don't, you know, I got to get really open so that we can get a ball. One of the things that both kind of my skill set and my approach to the position in the game was that, like, guys, like, all heck could break loose and we'll still find a way and get these 8 yards. And part of that had to do with the fact that I could run around a little bit, but part of it was just like I instilled the it's different kind of leadership styles. Mine was much more like, guys, football is a game of chaos. It's violent. It's, you never know what's going to happen from play to play. That's okay. As long as we're, you know, set on being competitive and, you know, giving our best effort and never giving in, as opposed to, you know, a different or alternative approach might have been like, we have to be exact and perfect in our execution. Some coaches are great at focusing on, like, you have to be exact and perfect in that execution. I was one that found that the game was more productive for me as a quarterback if I focused more on our effort and our competitiveness. And I think it's just, you talked about it. It's multifaceted. It's very nuanced. But you say, what's one of the clear indicators? I felt like one of the clear indicators with me, and it also happened with those comebacks that year, the comeback with Utah State, you know, the red alert in the bowl game. There was a couple – we were down 14 points to Oregon State at half. We were down 10 points to Hawaii at half, you know. And it, but there was never any, like, panic or nobody ever got tight. And so that, to me, is one of the biggest indication. Who is most at ease – or, sorry, what – who's in there when the offense feels most at ease is probably one of the indicators that I'd summarize that big, long diatribe and saying.
Great
that
stuff.
That was a big, long diatribe. Great stuff. We enjoyed it. Hey, Riley, let me ask you this. What is it like for these two quarterbacks as they take the practice field every day, wondering if they are the starting quarterback or not? How much did you have to overcome that just to get out there? And if you had a bad day, was that it? Or did you know, you have to fight through this emotional battle of fall camp's a month as opposed to one bad day. But what's it like for these guys trying to figure out if they're going to be the starter or not?
I feel like I was similar to them. I played freshman year at Utah State. I played in, I think, 7 or 8 games behind Max that 2009. So I had, you know, college football experience as a starter, as a backup, as do at least Bohannon and Retzlaff and these other guys, right? You got the whole room there. So they've been through it, so you know it intellectually, but you hit the nail on the head, Dave. It's all about managing emotions, because you know intellectually, like, the coach isn't going to make the decision off one drive in team. But when you go out and, you know, maybe the defense switches on you late and you end up checking to the, you know, you had the wrong run check on first down, and then on second down, you know, you're late to your backside read and you dirt your check down at your running back's feet. Oh, and also, you know, you passed up number two. If you would have been on time to number two, you would have had him, but you were late. So now you rush a check down, you throw it at his feet. And then 3rd and long comes and the coach whistles, you know, and the defense brings the house and the coach whistles a sack, you know, as you're hitting your back foot and your drop. And, like, there's your team reps for the day, or half your team reps for the day. Like, that is an emotional gut punch. But you know intellectually that's not disqualifying you, but that's not what your, like, visceral reaction says. Your emotions are telling you, like, dude, you're done. Like, you're out of here. And it's those emotions from drive to drive, from period to period in practice, and from day to day. So it is an intense experience. I do not envy those guys going through it, but I can tell you, having been on the other side of a couple of them, I was so much better off for it. So like a lot of the best things in life, they're going to hate it. Well, not hate, but it's going to be not very enjoyable as they're going through it. But as they come out the other side, they get into the season and they earn the respect and loyalty of their teammates, they're going to be grateful for what they went through.
Yeah, well said.
All right, Riley, let's finish with this. And each of the two quarterbacks that are at the front of this race have a significant advantage. One, Jake Retzlaff has been in Aaron Rodgers' offense and been around the program much longer than Gary Bohannon, which is why a lot of people feel like he is the incumbent, because he's just been here longer and he's coming off a scenario where he's ultra motivated because BYU lost all four games that he played in, so he wants to build off that. Gary Bohannon is the proven commodity, but it's been a long time since he did it, and now we're hearing that his arm is healthy. He's a great athlete, but he's got that natural confidence because, again, he's been in several more battles. So considering those two things, if you were to pick a starter on August 2nd for the Southern Illinois game on August 31st, which way are you leaning right now?
Good question. I'm going to fight the urge to dodge it because, like, I'm not in practice. I'm not seeing the film. I'm not in the meeting rooms with them and all of those things. But I can tell you this. Back when I was doing the radio analyst, Aaron was gracious enough to give Greg and I, you know, an hour or two. We met with him one time in the summer leading up and just like, coach, tell us, you know, what are you trying to accomplish? What new wrinkles do you have in the offense? Not so much that we're going to give away any trade secrets on air, but it just helps us call the game so much better if we have a little bit of context as to what, you know, you're trying to accomplish. And we did that for 3 or 4 years in a row. And every year, Aaron got up on the whiteboard and laid out their offensive priorities. And taking care of the football was number one and never moved. After that, it kind of switched from, you know, we need to establish the run and then play action off the run is our best. So establishing the run is best. Next, it was like, we have to be better in critical down. So third down and red zone. So like priorities kind of two and three, they kind of would the rank order would change, but it was protecting the football was number one. And I know Jake, reminded everybody that he didn't have a single turnover in spring ball. But then I've also heard him on your show and in other interviews talk about how if you don't take chances, if you don't take calculated risks as a quarterback, you know, you're eventually going to get choked out over the course of a game. That all that said, Bohannon played under Grimes. Grimes and Roderick were two peas in a pod, you know, before Grimes' departure. I think philosophically they approached the game very similar in a lot of ways. Their play calling might be different. The formations they like might be a little bit different. But philosophically, as it relates to starting with protecting the football, number one, great O-line play, number two, and then a quarterback's ability to lead his team and lead the huddle. Even if that's through making just great checks in the run game, Bohannon has that edge. All this said, I do feel like I'm going to make it conditional. My prediction will be conditional. If you truly feel that Retzlaff has put his, you know, perhaps whether it was decision-making, whether it was just caught up in the moment, whether it was inaccuracy or whatever it was, but if you truly feel like he's put his at times recklessness with the football behind him, he's your guy. If that is still a major concern for you and you are not 100% settled in your mind that Jake isn't going to go out there and put the possession of the ball in jeopardy, you've got, you know, all that tape and all that body of work for Bohannon on the other side, and you trot him out there. Because as Roderick says, possession of the football is precious. It truly is all that matters in the course of a football game, because you cannot score points without the football, and points are what ultimately determine the outcome of the football game. So there you go. There's my conditional prediction. Was that it's an election year. Was that slippery enough for you guys?
Yeah.
You have my vote, Riley.
Seriously.
You have my vote for sure.
Talking both sides. I got Camp Bohannon, so I got Camp Retzlaff. I don't know, guys. It's tough.
As long as you come out on August 31st and say, see, I told you, that would be the ultimate political approach.
Just like I called it.
As usual, thorough and insightful. Thanks, Riley, for the time.
Thanks, fellas.
Good to see you. The great Riley Nelson. After further review back on Tuesday nights, a special show. It's the schedule show. We're going to roll through the fall game by game. Join us 7 Eastern on the BYU TV app. Once the season starts, AFR will also be available on ESPN Plus for the whole world to enjoy.
After the break, the latest update from Paris and the Olympics, specifically Jimmer Fredette. Is he going to play again at all in Paris? And some numbers from Bill Connolly of ESPN that will, well, you just won't like them. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
BYU Sports Nation, all over social media, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok will be there all day long.
Let's go. Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer Linton. He is Dave McCann. Now for your Friday headlines, but not before we get to your daily trivia question featuring BYU football, and we continue to celebrate 100 seasons of BYU football. Lately, we've been on a roll. You and I,
yeah.
Blaine and I.
Blaine did all right.
We got some questions
good.
Right.
Good.
See if we can keep it rolling. So, Colton, what is it today?
All right, today's question. In the independence era, BYU played 13 games in 10 different NFL stadiums.
Yes.
How many of those 13 games did BYU win?
Oh, man, this is very, very detail-oriented. They played in 13 games in 10 different NFL stadiums.
Well, let's see. They beat San Diego State in the bowl game. There's one.
Okay.
Didn't win back at in Landover against West Virginia.
Nope. They didn't beat Missouri and Kansas City. They lost to West Virginia at FedEx Field. Man, I can't believe it's that many games. They did beat Houston in the Texans Stadium.
Yeah, there's two. The loss at Arrowhead.
Based on those, so those 2-4 through this 5 or 6 games we just laid out.
Yeah.
So percentage, I'm going to say that BYU was 5-8 because they beat Arizona in Kalani's opener in Glendale.
Yeah.
And they won. They beat Arizona twice and lost. Like they beat Arizona, Las
Vegas.
Vegas as well.
So 5, maybe 6. I'm giving you 6.
Let's go 6. You're going to see, you think 6?
I'm going to say
6. All right, you've convinced me. 6-7, Colton.
So close. 7-6.
Oh!
7-6.
Okay. A winning record.
Okay.
A winning record in the NFL.
You know, if we'd taken a few more minutes, we probably would have figured it out.
They beat UMass in Foxborough, too. Forgot about that one.
That's right, at Gillette Stadium.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
USF in Tampa Bay Stadium. Yeah, okay, 7-6. That's right.
Yeah.
That's okay. Right. Early on, it was not good, but then it got much better the later they went into independence. Good question. Holy cow. All right. Let's now get to today's headlines.
Cougars in Paris, our Olympic update. Jimmer missed both games yesterday with an injury as his team fell to 0-4 in 3x3 pool play. And he told us he's game to game with a leg issue. They don't got a shot without him.
No.
They're just not very good without him. We'll see what the team does later today. We hope Jimmer gets back on the floor. Not sure.
Painful meltdown against Latvia with Jimmer watching on. Based on conversations happening, he's not going to play again.
Like at all.
Whitney Orton Morgan racing right now in the first round of the 5,000 meters. Good luck to her. We'll update you on how she finishes as soon as that race is completed. 10 laps to go right now, and good luck to Courtney Waymond, who competes on Sunday in the first round of the women's steeplechase.
BYU football rolls out their third practice of fall camp later today. Media availability right afterwards. Interviews with both potential starting quarterbacks right here on this program on Monday.
BYU offensive lineman Connor Pate named to the All-State Werfel Trophy watch list, which is awarded to the player who best combines exemplary community service with athletic and academic achievement. And BYU wide receiver Parker Kingston named to the Paul Horning Award watch list, given to the most versatile player in college football. Wow, how about that for Parker?
Today we say welcome. Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah officially become members of the Big 12 Conference. That Big 12 is now 16, and yet we'll call it the Big 12.
BYU women's soccer kicking off the fall sports season tomorrow with the annual blue-white match. You can watch it on the BYU TV app or on Big 12 Now on ESPN Plus starting at 9 Eastern.
Women's hoops non-conference schedule is out this morning. The men, maybe in a week or two, we'll hope, but here's what it looks like for the women. A lot of home games in there. They'll play Rice and Iowa in Cancun.
Ooh.
Tough road date at Washington State, but this looks like a good group of games to get them ready for competition in the Big 12, especially with so many new faces on the roster.
Yeah, Wyoming's a tough matchup in women's basketball.
It's get them at home. Brand.
Yep, Rice and Iowa, the post-Caitlin Clark era at Iowa begins, but they'll probably still be a top 10 or top 15 team.
They'll be good.
At Washington State, to me, is a gauntlet. Like, that's a good program up there. That's a tough place to play in Pullman. Max Tooley recorded two tackles in his NFL debut preseason game for the Houston Texans during last night's rain-shortened Hall of Fame contest. Didn't enter the game until the second half, and that's unfortunately when the storm showed up. Yeah. Chicago Bears win the game 21-17.
I was bummed for him because he was going to play the whole half. So we got those two tackles, and then all of a sudden, all heck broke loose, and they're like, it's a preseason game. We're not coming out of the locker room. So we'll see what opportunity he's going to get in the next one with the Texans, so trying to make that roster.
Yeah, Mad Max trying to make that roster. After the break, Ariel Mackey-Williams and Sarah Bartholomew of BYU Women's Basketball react to the official non-conference schedule and tell us why they're ready to take the next step in year two of Big 12 play. This is BYUSN.
Big step forward.
Emma Calvert is borderline unconscious for BYU.
Davenport enters right back.
Ari Mackey-Williams, step back three.
Good! Anything can happen, so I'm always cheering for my team.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation on a Friday. Alongside Dave McCann, I'm Spencer Linton. We now welcome in a dynamic duo from BYU Women's Basketball to break down the newly released non-conference schedule and discuss the approaching campaign for BYU Women's Hoops. They are Ari Mackey-Williams and Sarah Bartholomew. Great to have both of you with us today.
Yeah, thank you guys for having us.
Okay, Ari, I need to start with you because, man, the unpredictability of last season with your injury and then Nani Falate deciding that she was going to step away from the program put BYU in a position where we thought they had a ton of depth at guard, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh man, now it's the two freshmen. And to their credit, they did a great job in roles as young players. But now that you're back, what kind of leadership role do you feel like you can bring to BYU Women's Hoops, given your perspective of sitting on the sidelines last year?
Yeah, obviously last season was really tough for me, having to sit out and just kind of watch, but I felt like I grew a lot in terms of just seeing the game from a different perspective, in terms of more from a coaching side of things. So I think that's definitely helped me in terms of now being back playing, just trying to help, especially the younger ones or the ones just coming in, just to make sure that they're comfortable and that they understand what our coaches are trying to implement. So although it was hard last year, definitely a lot of lessons and that I'm grateful for in a way.
Just call you Coach Ari now?
Maybe.
this right knee, is it fixed? Is it ready? Is it good?
Yeah, no, it's good. I've kind of started joking and saying that my knee's a bionic knee now. So, yeah, but it's super strong. I've done the rehab work. I've adhered to the timelines. And, yeah, I just have faith that Heavenly Father is putting me in a plan to be able to contribute to my team.
Mm. Well, the team missed both of you last year, one because you were hurt and the other, Sarah, you were in high school. But they need size. And you've seen the video from last year's games and the battles down low. What can you bring? I know you're young, but you're big, you're talented. What can you bring to this group right away?
No, yeah. I think one of the biggest things about me is I'm I love running up and down the court. Super fast, just head to rim. So just that speed aspect of the game, we're definitely trying to push it down the floor more this year. We say uncomfortably fast. So
that's how my wife drives.
I'm probably guilty of that too, Dave.
Yeah.
Needless to say, Ari, when you get the ball, you're looking up, and Sarah is a potential target down the floor.
Yeah, for sure. She's been running down, so I'm like, I'm gonna feed you the ball if you're looking.
So Ari, you look at this roster, and there are so many new faces. And having missed last year, being around but having not been on the floor, now you're back on the floor. Are you getting used to everybody? How's the chemistry coming?
Yeah. I think summer workouts have been really good so far. I think just some of our key points is obviously building our team culture that we're really wanting to focus on. Like you said, we're trying to rebuild our team chemistry with a lot of new faces. And I think, too, just a lot of the girls come in and they love to work. So that, as one of the older ones, it's really awesome to see, you know, Sarah. I can always see her in the morning, like, coming into shoot and stuff. And so, yeah, it's been really good.
Sarah, why was BYU the clear choice for you ultimately?
Yeah, I always grew up watching BYU. My parents were both alum. And I've been able to see just how much it aligns with my values. Playing in club in high school. I never wanted to play on Sundays, and I think to be able to play at a college level and still have that where my values are supported and everything, it's a huge blessing for me. So as soon as Amber called me up, I was like, yeah, I'm coming.
Let's go. The offer was extended and you immediately accepted.
Basically, yeah.
Well, despite the age difference and experience difference, both of you will be playing your first season in the Big 12. So how excited are you at this level of competition to get going?
Yeah, I'm really, really excited. It was, like I said before, obviously had missing out on that opportunity last season, especially not being able to play with the seniors that I've played with. But I'm really looking forward to this season. I think just embracing the challenges and just supporting my teammates in pressure situations and just, I think, really embracing the opportunities that are within the Big 12.
Let's take a look at the non-conference schedule, which was just announced. And when you immediately see it, it's hard not to notice what's happening in Cancun. One, it's Cancun, and also Iowa happens to be there, post-Caitlin Clark era, but still, great program, historic results that they have produced, and an amazing coach and setup. And then a road game at Washington State to close out. That's always a tough team and always a tough place to play. So, Sarah, what jumps off the page to you when you saw the non-conference
slate? No, for sure, Iowa. I was super excited about that. And then I just think it's a great build-up for our team. There's some really great games that we get to learn how to play together. I mean, you look at our roster, and there's a lot of us that are new. And so being able to get that experience with each other and then ready to hit Big 12 right away and just...
Ari, last year's team started on the road, it seemed, quite a bit. Not the case with this schedule. You had some home games to do just what Sarah said.
No, I'm looking forward to playing at home. Playing at home is obviously one of our favorite things that we love as a team and playing in front of our home crowd. So, yeah, I'm excited to have a lot of home games to start off our season.
Okay, we'll finish with this. Why do you feel like, and this is a question for both of you, BYU is ready to take a legitimate step forward in the Big 12 and this season compared to what you all accomplished last year?
I think that last year was a good stepping stone for us, but I think one of our strengths as a team is just having the identity of that we're playing for one another, and I think that's going to really help us. When one person scores, we all score. So I think that component, but then also just how unique BYU is overall, I think that's really, really special for us, and just having our faith, I feel like, will really help us as well.
Sarah, what would you add to that? I know, again, you didn't play last year. You're in high school, but you are hearing conversations, and you know the frustrations that were there last year at times. So why do you feel like this team is ready to overcome and take a step forward?
I just think, like, with the experience that we have, and we have a great upper class, and then just with the new players that have come in, we have great shooters, just ready to attack.
You're ready to go uncomfortably fast.
Spence has got it.
Let's go. Again, my motto probably for driving.
We look forward to calling your games and getting all that stuff going. It's hard to believe it's here, but we're sitting in August and ready to go.
Let's go. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
You got it.
We got soccer at Southfield tomorrow night. You'll be on the call for the blue-white exhibition. A lot of new faces for Jen Rockwood's squad. Our coverage starts at 9 Eastern time. It's on the BYU TV app, and it's also on Big 12 Now on ESPN+.
Brand new team. They'll face the second toughest schedule in the country. Hello! Let's keep the Overreaction Friday rolling, shall we, with some more fall camp highlights. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Back with our question of the day through 2 days of BYU football fall camp. What's your biggest overreaction about Cougar football? Our elite voice of the day, presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated, comes in from at CJ Real Hoops 1 on X, who says the linebacker core are deep enough and talented enough to overcome losing a stud like Ben Bywater.
Bywater is a stud, and they have depth at linebacker. They feel pretty good about it.
So maybe that's not a crazy overreaction, but hey, it's always tough to lose a guy like that. We just found out Whitney Orton has qualified for the final in Paris in the 5,000 meters.
That's fantastic.
Her preliminary went swimmingly well.
Nice job.
Today's Rise and Shout-out presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics. Let's give it to Jimmer Fredette, Dave.
Let's do it. Jimmer deserves it.
I know it's tough in the moment, but what he's done for 3x3 basketball to even get Team USA to the Olympics was nothing short of extraordinary. Our thanks to today's guests, Riley Nelson, Ari Mackey-Williams, and Sarah Bartholomew.
24/7, X, Instagram, Facebook, our conversation continues.
For Dave, I'm Spencer. Shout out to Elaine Michaelis. Have a great weekend. Go Cougs!